You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com.
What's up, Internet? My name is Matt Pollard, and you are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsoccer.com, powered by Last Word on Sports Incorporated, the Grove Cam Network, Roughneck Scarves, and Golden Goal Press. We are coming to you on the evening of Monday, May 27th, 2019, Memorial Day. Happy Memorial Day. Thank you to all of our servicemen and women, wherever you may be, past, present, and future. My good co-host, Daniel Sperry, how was your nearly ended three-day weekend?
I worked for three of the days, if you count covering the sporting game last night. So not too relaxing, but I get a couple of days off here this week, so it'll be fine. But yeah, I don't know. Memorial Day was great in the fact that it did not rain in Kansas City when I was supposed to be grilling on my patio. And that seems like the first time that that's happened in the last, 10 days. I'm sure you can attest to ridiculous snow and stuff that's been going on in Colorado still as we approach June. However, Kansas City's just been on the absolute wet end of things, and it just does not stop raining. And then all of a sudden, Sunday produced a beautiful day for a game. It was perfect at Children's Mercy Park. We'll talk more about it later. But it rained a little bit overnight. And then it did not rain, and it was very, very nice when I was grilling out on my patio this evening. So nice to kind of, have a Corona and just sit in front of a grill and relax for a couple hours. It's good.
No, great stuff, Dan. No, we have been getting the Front Range of Colorado has been getting rain almost every single day. It's been just unusually green. We had that one patch of snow where I was up in Toronto that week for training for the day job. We talked about it when we potted that week, Dan. And then I got back and it just rained for 3-4 days consecutively. And it, everything around work where I usually go for hiking, the main park by my apartment where I go running, was just completely lush and green. It almost looked like, late June, early July. And while, Denver and the greater state of Colorado doesn't get a whole lot of rain, we pretty, by the end of May, we pretty much have that regular, depending on where you are geographically, somewhere between the hour of 11 and the hour of 2, a regular 15-minute thunderstorm that just sprinkles everything and that just keeps that lush for an extended period of time. And it has been so green. It has been so rainy. We had long patches of overcast. It felt like England to a certain extent. And then we did have that one little patch of snow. And usually even this late in the season, if we're getting rain and that means it's moving east, that usually means, unfortunately, for states like Kansas, Nebraska, and the eastern third of Colorado, that usually means tornadoes are on that way, and that usually means that rain used to be snow when it was over the high mountains. So A-Basin will have a little bit of powder left over for the last couple of weekends that they're open, and Breckenridge said they'll be open for one more Friday through Sunday as well. So not sure if I'm going to get any spring skiing going in. I did a whole bunch of hiking this weekend to try and get back into 14er shape, but it's summer in Colorado, Dan, and it is extremely unpredictable. Both in weather and in the level of form of both the Colorado Rockies and the Colorado Rapids. But let's get to something that's a little bit more consistent, Dan. We have not had a pod yet where we've been able to talk about this, and while it's old news, I feel both of these players deserve, some overhead claps and some praise from us. Listeners, Chad Marshall has officially retired from soccer. He had a bunch of injuries a couple of weeks, maybe even a month or more ago, with the Seattle Sounders, and it was kind of questionable when or if he was going to come back, and he just openly said that it wasn't really going to work, and so he has decided to retire immediately. Seattle Sounders have moved on to a certain extent as far as what they're doing defensively. I particularly like what I've seen from Kim Ki-hee from the center back position, Dan, and then also we got a couple weeks ago off of DeMarcus Beasley returning to the lineup after a knee injury that had him miss a couple weeks towards the end of Houston's CCL run this year, saying that he will be retiring at the end of this year. So you have Chad Marshall, I would say arguably, Dan, at least one of the top five center backs in MLS history. You have possibly the best left back in the history of the United States men's national team retiring at the end of this season. We don't get to watch Chad Marshall again, unfortunately, but we're we're going to get to see DeMarcus Beasley as the captain of, I think, a team, a Houston Dynamo team that could be very, very competitive. When it's all said and done, 5-10 years from now, what will we remember about Chad Marshall and MLS? And what will we remember about Run DMB from his time both with the U.S. national team abroad and then, of course, in MLS with the few stints that he had?
Yeah, so I mean, first and foremost, I mean, congrats to both of them on a wonderful career. Goodness, I mean, it's really weird to think about Chad Marshall not being in the picture anymore. The dude's been such a long time stalwart was in Columbus, he was with the Sounders. It's been weird the last couple of years to like not think about a Sounders back line with Brad Evans and Chad Marshall on it, but you know, things happen, guys get older and it moves on. Sooner or later, you know, it's going to feel that way for Sporting whenever Matt Beisler and Graham Zusi and Seth Sinovic all kind of hang up the cleats, guys who have done it at a pretty high level in the league for a long time. So I'm sure Sounders fans, one, are saddened. They should be excited for the future though. Without him, however, you know, Marshall's legacy is always going to be just like he was never. I feel like the ideal center back is that guy who is never like, wow, he's the best center back in the league. And then like the next year, you're like, because he comes back to reality, like there is, or even just has a dip in performance, then everybody is kind of like, oh, well, has he fallen off his rocker kind of a thing. Chad Marshall was never that guy. It was always just a consistent performance. You got the same thing from Chad Marshall every single year. There's a reason why he didn't win Defender of the Year, but there's also a reason why he has had such a long, successful career, and that is because he is one of the most consistent, solid center backs that this league has seen. And I think, I think it's funny, cause, like, you've seen the argument there from plenty of Sounders fans on Twitter. One, because they're all over on Twitter, and they have a massive Twitter base, but, why Chad Marshall never won an MLS Defender of the Year, and other writers have kind of mused on that. I simply think it's because he was just always consistent. You knew what you were going to get out of him. It wasn't ever a spectacular Iko Parra season. It was never, you know, like I feel like Defender of the Year is always comes from the guy who, he may not have been the best defender, but he was the guy who had one of the best years from a person you weren't expecting to have one of the best years. That's the way it's been the last couple of years. Iko Parra, Aaron Long, their performances kind of came out of left field. And then all of a sudden you're like, wow, this guy's really freaking good. Walker Zimmerman is another one who kind of stands out. And even goodness, the other Matt Hedges is another one that kind of sticks out to me as well. Guys who have stellar seasons and then a drop off and some injury and then a return to form and then another drop off. Chad Marshall, like I said, never had that. So I think that's why he kind of flew under the radar. But it's also for me what makes him one of the best defenders is because he always was just a consistent performer. You knew what you were going to get out of him and you got it out of him every time. And I think that's a coach's dream to have out of a center back. DeMarcus Beasley, I'll probably remember him more for what he did, with the U.S. men's national team and in Europe. I was thinking Rangers, and a few others that he played for. PSV, Rangers. For some reason, I was thinking Maurice Adu. Not him. I do believe Beasley did play for Rangers at some point, but he wasn't the like folklore legend that Maurice Adu was for them, just because of that goal he scored against Celtic. But, no, Beasley, one of the very first times I can really recall a U.S. men's national team Mexico match, was a Dos Acero, in Columbus, and it was World Cup qualifying for the 2006 World Cup. And DeMarcus Beasley, put on a showcase and scored a wonderful little goal, a typical goal that you would have expected out of Beasley back when he was playing up top, and you have this curling ball that kind of tucks into the back, into the far post, and it was just a perfect finish to put them up. It wasn't Landon Donovan that ran the show that day. It was DeMarcus Beasley, and I think those I'll never forget some of the performances he had. And in my very early soccer fandom and fanhood, that he had in a U.S. men's national team shirt. And another one specifically, in person, I saw him score a brace, in San Jose, scored a goal and two assists, in a tune-up to the 2006 World Cup, that the U.S. men's national team played at AT&T Park. They beat Japan 3-2 on, Eddie Pope, Beasley, and then Twelman scored, and then Beasley got a brace in a post 2006 World Cup friendly against China at Spartan Stadium back in 2007. I think going to that game was like a birthday gift kind of a thing. But the times that I've been able to see in person DeMarcus Beasley just tear it up on the field and do so in an American shirt, I'll always remember. And he may not have had the most consistent career like Chad Marshall did, but his bright moments are some of the moments that I hold on to and will hold on to forever in my early soccer fandom. So Beasley is very much appreciated. Chad Marshall is very much appreciated as well. And I wish them a happy retirement, it will be sad to not have them around on the field, at least playing in a game over the next couple of years here.
Couldn't agree with you more, Dan. When I look back and remember Chad Marshall's career, first of all, I'm going to remember the fact that he won. You know, obviously he was a big, you know, he was the spine of that team with that Columbus Crew team under Siggy Smit, rest in peace, you know, that won the double in 2008 with Supporters Shield and then MLS Cup. You know, that was with the Frankie Haydou team. And then obviously, GBS, who's now coaching with the LA Galaxy. And then, of course, you know, he comes to Seattle Sounders in their MLS infancy and, you know, wins just about everything that there is to win. And was, you know, a spine of their team. And even if he wasn't the star of each individual team, and I'll let your words on Chad Marshall's history with winning and not winning, the Defender of the Year award, you know, he was never the star of any of the teams that he was on. But in every single year that he was healthy and playing for those teams, at worst, he was the fourth most important player on that team. You know, he wasn't the star. Obviously, MLS and soccer in general are going to focus more on the offensive pieces because of the direction that the league's gone with where they spend their money as far as offensive pieces go. And obviously, everybody remembers the goals that are scored more so than, you know, the nine really simple plays over the course of a game that a center back will make to prevent a goal from being scored. But that's really all Chad Marshall. That's everything that he stood for and everything that he represented. You know, he was never the reason the team lost because he was so consistent. He just wasn't the main star of the team. But I think, you know, every single team needs that guy who's going to be the rock at the back, who's going to be consistent, who's going to be your fourth most important poster boy player. And he was that for every single team that he was. And he was a big part of the reason that he left Columbus Crew with a whole bunch of hardware and why he stepped, you know, ultimately now is hung up his Seattle Sounders jersey, you know, after X number of years, and they never made, you know, they never missed the playoffs, and they won a bunch of U.S. Open Cups, and obviously they got the Supporters Shield, and now the MLS Cup on top of that. And there's no denying that without Chad Marshall, that I think there's serious doubt whether or not Columbus Crew get any of the trophies that they won. And certainly, you know, the Seattle Sounders trophy case, you know, trophy cabinet isn't ballooning to the point that it has just 10 years on in their time in MLS without Chad Marshall. I agree with you, Dan, that I'll probably remember DeMarcus Beasley most for what he did in a U.S. national team shirt, more so than what he did at any point in MLS. Obviously, for our ages and our level of interest in soccer, and then also the availability of streaming the games, you know, his time when he was in Europe was a little bit limiting in terms of how much we could actually watch. And up until the end of his time in Liga MX, I would also say that access was limited. I'll also put my hand up and admit that my comprehension of Spanish probably limited me in how much Liga MX that I could watch at the time that he was with Puebla. And then I want to say also Pachuca, or maybe I'm thinking Omar Gonzalez, actually. But, you know, I'll remember old man DeMarcus Beasley, you know, holding up that U.S. Open Cup with the Houston Dynamo at the end of last season. And I'll remember, particularly towards the end of his career, where you still saw flashes of what he was able to do physically, and certainly the brain was churning, and nothing on the mental side of the game for him, I think, has diminished significantly. But you could see, especially in some of those international games where he was struggling or just really, you know, getting beaten up, whether it was fouls or getting run down by really physical players, you know, I'll remember the for last World Cup qualifying cycle, and the U.S. went into the Azteca and got a draw that was off of the Michael Bradley, you know, wonder strike from 40 yards out. And I just remember Beasley getting completely beaten up in that game with ticky-tack fouls and stuff off the ball that wasn't getting called and CONCACAFing. And just with every single one of those plays, I was just looking at him and thinking, like, this guy's 36 years old. I don't know if he's going to make it to the end of the game, let alone have any legs for the next game or going back to his club team. Is all like DeMarcus Beasley might legitimately have to get buried on the field at the Azteca. And I remember that, and I searched back through my Twitter, Dan, and I tweeted basically the exact same thing from the 2014 World Cup cycle, that just somehow, some way, old man DeMarcus Beasley found a way to get it done over the course of two World Cup qualifying cycles and Gold Cups and a Copa America in there, when other than occasionally Jorge Villafañe, there just wasn't a reliable left-back alternative at that position. And he filled that role and filled it spectacularly. And that's a major hole that I think, you know, that's going to be a question that Greg Berhalter is going to have to answer and answer very well. And I don't know if there's an obvious one right now in terms of filling that void, in the same way that I would say the team struggled post Landon Donovan and Clint Dempsey. And, you know, we'll see how things go with Zach Steffen as to whether or not there's an obvious and high caliber replacement for the post-Howard, post-Brad Guzan era of the U.S. national team. But I think maybe if Greg Berhalter isn't able to find a viable option at left back, I think we're going to remember DeMarcus Beasley a lot more fondly because of what he provided and ultimately the void that he ultimately left. Let's move on, Dan. I'm going to throw it straight to you. For the first time in a million years, Sporting Kansas City got a win. WrestleMania is back at Children's Mercy Park. Johnny Russell got a hat trick in the game this past Sunday and a spectacular goal where he dribbles from the midfield. And I want to say it was Kevin Leerdam tried to stick his leg out and intercept the ball, and I don't know how Johnny Russell got through that and slotted into the bottom corner. If Mohamed Salah does that in the Premier League, Dan, that is the only thing anybody is talking about in England as far as Premier League is concerned. What happened and how did you experience it yesterday at Children's Mercy Park?
So when Johnny Russell gets going, there's always this like look in this, it's the demeanor that he kind of carries himself on the field. Not that he like carries himself differently or turns himself off during games. He's always kind of on. But when he really wants something and really starts hunting it, you can tell it is one of those days for Johnny Russell. And I've seen that look a few times. One time was the hat trick that he got last year. But it was in a 6-0 game. He looked that way against, who else was it? When they were in LA last year, they got a big win against the Galaxy. He did that as well. Had a kind of, I wouldn't say a similar goal to that second one, but he did kind of sneak his way through a couple defenders and do that. He did that twice against the Galaxy, actually, last season. But there's just moments where all of a sudden you can just kind of see that he has really raised his game another level because he wants what's in front of him and he's going to go freaking get it. And it's kind of the reason why Sporting fandom has kind of adopted his middle name as Johnny Effing Russell. You'll see them relate, not relate to him, but refer to him on Twitter as JFR, and that's Johnny Effing Russell, every single time. So you kind of got that feeling from the get-go. Just from Sporting. I mean, they had two really good attempts right off the bat. You can see their front three, despite Christian Namath being out, was moving very fluid. They obviously had a really good week in build up and kind of learning how to play together with Johan Kraaze playing as a false nine, Callum Rowe on the left, and Johnny Russell obviously on the right. But actually, all three goals almost kind of came out of counterattacking situations, even though Sporting had been very, very dominant. And they were able to kind of allow Seattle to kind of come out a little bit. And then they trapped him, turned the ball over, turned him over quick, and got the ball forward into a situation there. The first goal came from, or the first goal was the same, was that way. Johan kind of got the ball out wide, it held it up, and then passed it over to Johnny, who ripped one to the lower corner. And then the second one was a really quick play out that led to Elie springing Russell. And then Russell just kind of carried the ball and waited for someone to like actually commit to his tackle. But Nico Hasler made such a good run at right back. That's one thing Johnny pointed out in the post-game afterwards, was that run from Nico Hasler is what's really made that goal happen, because it was so good and so well-timed that when he bombed forward and overlapped Johnny at that right time, you could kind of see him. He was at, he was like asking whether or not he wanted to overlap or underlap Johnny. And Johnny kind of asked him to, it didn't look like he pointed at him, but it's just kind of one of those things that when you're making that run, you kind of make eye contact real quick and you know what the guy wants. And so he overlapped him, and it was so good. It drew two of the three or four Seattle defenders that were in front of him over to him. And then all he had to do was cut onto his left, and he was in wide open space in the middle of the box. And it's an easy finish for him on Stefan Fry every single time. So that goal, and then, you know, the third one to rip it in, it looked like Fry was trying to track back over right so quick. He took it first time, and his balance was just completely off, and all he could kind of do was fall and flail at it as it curled in the lower corner. But yeah, it was one of those moments with Russell, as I said, that you know, you kind of just know when he's got it for that game, and he's going to get a hat. It's like, it's one of those it's the mood that he kind of has on the ball, and just kind of where he picks it up and how he starts running at defenders. You know, he's not screwing around. And it's one of those, like in the press box every single time, we're like, he could get a hat trick today because he can do it. This is his second time doing it, with the team, second time in 13 months. He's the second Sporting Kansas City player to score two hat tricks with them, in that perform, to have two hat tricks with the team. The only other one who did it was Eddie Johnson. And actually, I can't remember the exact name of it. I'm a local, he's not a reporter, but he just is killer on Sporting stats and database. But he had is, I believe the goal, happened on the perfect two date anniversary of Eddie Johnson doing it as well. Within a certain amount of years. So that's kind of interesting, but, regardless of that, Sporting Kansas City absolutely needed 3 points, and they had to hold on to do it. Tim Melia made a few mistakes at the end, and then he covered up for it big time with a massive double save, gave the ball away, was caught out off his line. Nico Lodero tried to chip him. He leaped up and kind of parried it over, and it went straight to the feet of Harry Ship. And as he got up and moved over, he charged out and got and pushed the ball away out to the side, and was able to kind of make a double save there and just win the ball at the right time and got the ball out of danger there. And, you know, Sporting Matt Beiser kind of pulled up with a bit of a cramp. Was told it was not an injury to Matt Beiser, which is good for them, but he pulled up with a cramp there. They had to make a substitution at center back at the end of the game, and Peter hates having to sub center backs unless he absolutely has to. I think most coaches do, but Peter loathes it. He hates having to do it. And if they're playing a terrible game, he'd rather just stick them out there and make them suffer through it than like actually just pull them off and try and make the change. So, he has to be something serious for him to go off. Luckily, it was just a cramp for Beiser, but Sporting was able to hold on. It's their first win since March 30th, which is that 7-1 win over Montreal. You know, this team has kind of looked good. They've been able to been close to points, all 3 points multiple times at home over the last few weeks. The road is obviously is a little bit different in MLS, but they're not a team that's known for dropping road points, and they dropped or home points. And I believe they dropped, 5 home points, in their last 3 home matches. So, that's not a record that Sporting kind of wants to keep going. And, it was for them, it was kind of one of those things where the losing run stops here. And Johnny Russell stepped up to do it himself on the offensive end. And, defensively, they were able to hang on and, kind of weather Seattle's storm. And, you know, Seattle's still a very, very good team, and they were terrible for about 60 minutes of it. But they're still a very, very good team. And, considering their spot in the standings. So they're a team that can make things happen. I think Sporting did a really good job. This should be the kind of win that spurs them on. If they're able to get 4 points out of their games this week, they have a homer on Wednesday, for listeners tomorrow. against the LA Galaxy, and then on Saturday at the Houston Dynamo this week. That's their setup, and that's going to be – that's kind of 4 points out of that. I think you'll see Sporting Kansas City really looking on the up and up and fully out of their schneid, we'll say.
Well said, Dan. Let's move on. Dan, this coming Sunday – or excuse me, Saturday night in Portland, Oregon, for the first time in 2019, the Portland Timbers will play a home game. The renovations and expansion of the – we'll call it the TV opposite side. I don't remember which side, Northwest, East. It's the main stand that you had that's not part of the original baseball park aspect of Providence Park. We'll be opening up. Dan, we've both seen the renderings. I've seen a couple photos as they're now finishing things up. It looks absolutely gorgeous. Providence Park will be expanded to a capacity of 25,218, much needed. So you're going to have the awesome, you know, that corner with the, you know, behind home plate, so to speak, extending into where the Timbers Army sits. And then now a proper site on the newest part of the park in terms of, an expanded capacity. I think this takes the Portland Timbers to a new level. That takes their venue to a new level. And really, the only thing I think you need for major U.S. national team games being played there is a grass surface. That is another topic for another podcast. But in any case, Dan, the Portland Timbers have gotten some momentum with a couple of recent results. They had a big win at Philadelphia Union on the weekend, a 3-1 win for them. They're playing better soccer. They're healthy. They brought in a new DP who's absolutely killing it and getting on, you know, with the typical Argentine player comes in and rocks it for the Portland Timbers, and I think this is the perfect time for them to be home. They have just, I think, 5 road games the rest of the season. I think they're in a way better position than DC United was going into the opening of Audi Field last season. Your thoughts on the new stadium and what it means for the Timbers as they hunt towards a return to MLS Cup this season?
Well, I love what the design of the stadium was at first. I would talk with Jamie Goldberg from the whatever I don't even know what the
name the Oregonian paper is,
but I mean, yeah, the Oregonian. Okay, so or something like whatever the main port paper is. I had a chance to talk with Jamie Goldberg about their stadium after Sporting in Portland's Western Conference final last year. We were talking about it, and she said that they kind of wanted to emulate what La Bombonera is in South America. And if any of you are familiar with Boca Juniors and La Bombonera, it is a massive stadium. It's probably closer to 60,000-65,000. But they have, it's this kind of giant horseshoe thing outside of it. And then there is a massive wall of boxes and whatnot that just kind of keeps and traps that sound in. And so the field is this very odd, like you have one end, which is the massive supporter section, another crazy group of supporters on the end. The middle is somewhat whatever on the actual stand side, but then where the player benches and everything is almost kind of built up above it. And then it just goes straight up with layer upon layer of seating and boxes and a roof and all of that. And it just kind of really traps the noise in and it makes it an incredible atmosphere and an incredibly hostile atmosphere for opposing teams to play. And Portland has always been an incredibly hostile place to play in. It is going to be so even more. It's not about adding the fans to the stadium. It's more about the acoustics of what this has done. That side of the stadium was sat a bit lower than the main roof that goes around behind Timbers Army. Now this roof will sit above that. And if you don't know how sound travels from the mouth, basically kind of straight up. So that's why supporter sections who are roofed in like that have a lot of noise that travels and projects a lot better than, say, Centennial 38 in Dick's Sporting Good Park, where it just kind of goes straight up into the air and gets lost because there's no roof over the top of it. So now you have this
roof. Little bit off the roof, off the mountain roof, but that's only if you're, you know, right around the center circle. But yes.
Right. But imagine if it's all closed in, it becomes a. This is what is all of that noise that could potentially escaped out that side of the stadium is now going to be helped to be trapped in with the roof and the extension of the wall and that side of the stadium. So it's going to make for an incredibly hostile atmosphere. I like what it's done and just kind of really fully bringing together what is a very old venue in Providence Park, but a kind of help bringing it into the modern age a little bit, but also emulating some really cool stuff from around the world, especially with La Bombonera in Argentina. So I'm really stoked for how this is all going to play out and what it's going to be like and sound like. I'll certainly be paying attention to that match. Just for the sake of seeing what it's like as they kind of reopen it and get their first home game of the season underway. And it's kind of a perfect timing as Portland's really seemed to hit their stride in the last couple of weeks.
Absolutely, Dan. I would say along with Red Bull Arena, I would say Providence Park is my number two in terms of MLS stadiums that I have not been to that are on the top of my bucket list, and especially with, you know, the expansion of the ground and really just the completion of the, not the bowl, but, you know, rounding out, like you said, about the levels in terms of the height of the stand and the number of people on each side, you know, really, I think, takes Providence Park to a new level where maybe, you know, where it was when the Portland Timbers came into MLS or even their more recent USL days, you know, it still kind of felt like a repurposed baseball stadium for soccer. Obviously bigger in capacity and, you know, fit to the stadium. This certainly wasn't, you know, Louisville City playing at Slugger Field or anything and, you know, having the surface not be consistent as well. But I think this certainly ups the game from the standpoint of the Portland Timbers. You know, we've seen Merritt Paulson be willing to spend big money on times for major players, but maybe not have the whole total budget that, you know, in the Western Conference that he's had to compete with in recent years with Seattle Sounders and certainly two LA clubs. And I think this ups the ante in terms of them, you know, maybe not to compete completely with the level of them, but they're no longer going to be, I think, seen or actually as a budget team across the entire budget or the three DPs that they have as they may have been in the past with Seattle Sounders and the two LA teams. I think they're better for it, and I think MLS is better for it as well. With that, Dan, let's head on to the roundtables. We're both really tired today. Listeners, after the three-day weekend and with the midweek in MLS, it was kind of weird as far as scheduling the podcast, so it's going to be an abbreviated show tonight, so we're going to go ahead straight into MLS Pick'ems, and we'll start, Dan, with the aforementioned Sporting Kansas City hosting the LA Galaxy, one of the lesser-known or lesser-big Dan-Matt derbies as far as matchups that we care about. This game will be at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday at Children's Mercy Park on ESPN Plus for most of the country. Dan, who you got and why with Zlatan Ibrahimovic officially being back for the LA Galaxy, and do you anticipate any changes in the injury report for SKC?
Yeah, I think if you saw the injury report this week, they had, I believe there was, had five people that were unquestionable, where a couple weeks ago, or last week, there was only two that were unquestionable, and eight, I believe, were sitting as out. Now I think we're around five and five, if I'm correct. Gerson Fernandez was kind of ramping it up towards the end of last week. Zusi, was starting to ramp it up towards the end of last week. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe one of those, was involved, at the weekend or in this game just to kind of spell, some guys some rest. But Peter Vermes is usually the kind of guy who will change a lineup. He'll change the lineup after, you know, on the third game of the 3 and 7 days kind of a thing for Sporting, it'll be 3 and 6 days. He usually changes the lineup around the third time. So I expect it to be pretty similar. The only thing is that Johan Kraaze looked absolutely gassed. I wouldn't be surprised if they tried Busio up top or just went with Namath as he'll return. Well, actually, that'll probably be Namath. But, sorry, I'm getting off on a tangent here. I don't expect a whole lot of changes out of Sporting Kansas City, but wouldn't be surprised if somebody like Graham Zusi got thrown into the mix or Gianluca Busio for one of the midfielders as well. That being said, I do see Zlatan returning for the LA Galaxy, but I have a good feeling that one of the Sporting KC defenders will be able to kind of limit the balls into him. Right now, he is pretty much their entire offense, and I think that will help Sporting Kansas City be able to kind of stop what the Galaxy have been doing recently. So it'll be an interesting match to watch. Both teams aren't entirely at full strength. Both will be on somewhat of short rest. So I'll go with a draw here. I think this will be a 1-1 draw. I can't see a full winner, but who knows? I didn't see a winner this weekend between Seattle and Sporting, and that ended up being a winner. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, no, I'll agree with you, Dan. I'll probably take 1-1 in this one as well. I'd like Zlatan to get a goal or maybe set up a, you know, be the primary assist man. The reason that the Galaxy goal happens will be because of Zlatan. I maybe slightly disagree with you about both teams being on short rest, if for no other reason that the LA Galaxy played on Friday night this past week, getting a big 1-0 win against Orlando City, while Sporting Kansas City had to play on the Sunday, and the Galaxy did get a big win in that, you know, their first, I think their first road win of the season, if I'm not mistaken. They figured out a couple things defensively. I think GBS is just trying to make things work as far as what's going on as fullback. But given that the LA Galaxy have a late game this week, both teams are on a double game week, if I'm not mistaken, Dan. Yes, the Galaxy play on Sunday at home in a late game against New England Revolution. I gotta think that GBS is probably saying, let's go with the closest thing to a first team that we have healthy for the game on Wednesday, try to get out with a draw, and then we'll deal with that in terms of trying to get a win against New England on home. So I think we're gonna see, as far as health and fullback availability, the closest thing to a first team from the Galaxy. I think they're going to be a little bit more defensive, but I think they got out a 1-1 draw. I agree with you. Like, it's going to take some magic from somebody, and I think both teams are going to do well enough to negate the other's primary danger man. You know, if that means that, you know, Traore or Jorgen Selvig doesn't cross the halfway line and just tries to contain, Johnny Russell. And like you said, Dan, you know, Matt Beisler's probably okay for this game. You know, I think they'll be able to keep Zlatan in check enough, and it'll be a 1-1 game. Let's move on to the Saturday game, Dan, as we tease a little bit. Portland Timber is reopening up an expanded and renovated Providence Park. They'll be taking on LAFC, 8:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN2. Dan, who you got and why?
I'll go with the draw on this one as well. I think poor LAFC, I believe, is still a good portion ahead of where... however, Portland will be at home. It will be a heck of an atmosphere. I think that's going to be a little bit difficult for LAFC in this one. Brian Fernandez has been fantastic since he joined Portland Timbers. I see him getting a goal. Valeri, the goal from Diego Valeri this weekend was incredible. Quick give and go, and bam, a shot ripped into the lower corner. It's just hard to see Portland not getting a goal here and being at home, considering the circumstances. I think be able to get a draw, at least draw, against LAFC.
I'll take a Timbers win in this one, actually, Dad. You know, MLS teams normally have a really, really good performance and result in their stadium opening. I have to think that the Timbers are going to be excited to get back. I don't think it'll be convincing. I don't think it'll be big. I think it'll be just one more individual moment from Brian Fernandez, you know, Sebastian Blanco, or certainly a Diego Valeri that makes the difference. And maybe they just do enough to contain Carlos Vela, who's been an absolute monster for LAFC this season. I'm not worried, but I'm starting to be a little bit more aware and a little bit concerned in the long term with what LAFC is getting as far as their center forward situation. You know, yes, Adama Diomande's been fantastic when healthy since joining LAFC, you know, almost a calendar year ago now, but he hasn't really been healthy. And I'll be honest, Dan, I have not been impressed with Christian Ramirez this season at all. So if you're not worrying about the center forward position, I think that allows the Timbers to turn their defensive focus towards what's going on at the wing. What do they have to deal with on the wing? Carlos Vela and Diego Rossi. And if they're able to put a little bit more energy towards that and negate those guys, I think that helps them as far as getting a defensive performance with the Timbers army certainly well behind them. So I'll take the Timbers in this one 2-1, but, you know, this game could go either way. I could see a one goal win for either team, certainly could see a draw as well. You know, if I was doing betting scoring, I would almost even it out, you know, 33 1/3% for each of those three, possibilities. And then let's move on to the Sunday game, Dan. You got Minnesota United hosting Philadelphia Union. This will be at 6 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Plus. Minnesota United with a big but not convincing 1-0 win over the Houston Dynamo. Philly still one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference, but a little bit of a stumble up on the weekend. You had Alejandro Bedoya, you know, with a pretty conciliatory tweet saying that it was all his fault and they're moving on to Wednesday. Both teams will be playing midweek. Philly will be at home, but then we'll be traveling west and north. And then Minnesota, you know, will be at Atlanta and then having to travel back home. Dan, who you got and why?
I'm going to go with Minnesota. Why? Because the Western Conference this year versus the Eastern Conference It does not look good for the Eastern Conference, and especially last week, the Western Conference nearly had a clean sweep of the Eastern Conference if it hadn't been for the New York Red Bulls midweek point. I'm going to go with Minnesota on this one just because Philadelphia traveling to Minnesota, it's a very different atmosphere there now than it has been in the past. I like this Philly team a lot, but I think this Minnesota team defensively has come on really strong. They've been able to find goals when Darn Quintero may not have it. So we'll see how it goes for them. I'll take a Minnesota in this one. I'll take it 2-1 over the Union.
Retweet favorite. My main reason for agreeing with your result here, Dan, is if I look at it, I see, I think Philly probably thinks that their better result or their better game to get a result in this week is probably their home game against the Colorado Rapids. So I'm thinking probably with the squad rotation that they go for the win on the Wednesday and then just try to gut out a result against Minnesota. So I think we'll see more squad rotation in this game and less of a first team in Minnesota. For Minnesota, I think it's going to be the opposite, playing, at Atlanta United. I don't believe, they won last year at Atlanta, or the last time they were in Atlanta, I think they got a result. But I think we're going to see more of a defensive team for them and then try to get a result for them to protect home field. So I think you're probably going to see a reserve team for Minnesota in their midweek game, and then more of a first team on Saturday. For Philly, I think it's going to be the opposite. I like Minnesota at home with more of a first team against Philadelphia on the road with more of a reserve team. I'll take 2-1 as well. With that, listeners, that does it for all of our main stuff. It is time for last words. Dan, tell us about Golden Goal Press. Do you have any last words, and where can people yell at you on Twitter for all the stupid things you said tonight?
Wow, have I said something stupid? Damn, I'm going to make myself conscious. No, I'm kidding. You can find me on Twitter at SpurryDan94 if you want to come at me for stupid things I say. It happens a lot anyways. Thanks to our sponsor, Golden Eagle Press, the best choice for you to get custom shirts, hats, mugs, and other items for just yourself or your organization. Check out their amazing products at a fraction of the price of other places at GoldenGoalPress.com. I don't even have a rant. Just look at what freaking Chris Wondolowski's doing. 6 goals in 2 games. We've got Wando 150. He broke another record. Wando's record this week that he broke was the all-time leader in game-winning goals in MLS history. It is ridiculous that that man does. I think he said in an interview with either Joel Soria or a few others this weekend, after he broke the record on Saturday and kind of had this week of building up, he said he would trade all 148 of them for a chance to lift a trophy as a captain. He has not done that at all with the San Jose Earthquakes. Their only trophy that they've won is the Supporters Shield that they won in 2012. I don't think he even got to lift it or kind of celebrate that in front of fans that were with the team. At that time, it was kind of passed between fan bases. So, it's going to be interesting to see this run, whether or not the San Jose Earthquakes kind of continue on and push into the playoffs. I do think they're a very strong team. I'm sure a financial reinforcement is on the way. Once they can get the ridiculous salary that Vaco is being paid off the books for a guy who can't even come off the bench as their 12th man kind of a thing. We'll see what happens. This team has a lot of young potential within it. And at some point they've got to get Chris Wondolowski a chance to lift a trophy. So US Open Cup or MLS Cup, I don't care what it is, get that man a chance to sit on the podium and lift the trophy. He's done it for his home. He's done everything for his hometown team. And he deserves to be able to do at least that. So keep on Wando. But yeah, his game winning goal in the 81st minute against Toronto FC broke the record for all time game winning goals in MLS history. So I don't know, man. Just give some love to Wando. The dude's been doing it for a really long time, and man, he is really good at finding spaces within the 18. It's just absolutely ridiculous. But yeah, that's it for me tonight.
Well said, Dan. The only last word I'll have is actually a correction. I think you, just to clarify, La Bombonera, home of Boca Juniors in Argentina, has an official capacity of 49,000. So if there's any Argentine footy fans who are listening to this, please don't, yell at us on Twitter about getting that wrong. Apologies, Dan. Listeners, you can follow me on Twitter at LWS Matt Pollard. Check our written audio and video work at lastwordonsoccer.com and at lastwordsc across all social media platforms. We're about to start ramping up for the 2 international tournaments this summer, the Women's World Cup taking place in France, and certainly the Gold Cup taking place throughout the United States. So head on over to lastwordonsoccer.com for all that content that we'll be doing. Thank you to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get your custom scarves for your group or your team, especially if you're wrapping up for the Women's World Cup, at roughneckscarves.com. With that, listeners, we will see you next week. We're talking a whole bunch of stuff, MLS, and then hopefully starting to get into our previews for the Women's World Cup as we see if the Lady Inks can defend their title in France. We'll see you then.